Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. I'm Dr. Paul, your host. Today's show, folks, I have a massive announcement. Actually, Google whistleblower Zach Voorhees announces the release of his Blast Video platform. This is a no-censorship platform that will bring you Rumble, BitChute, Brighteon, videos that are important, that are live, without any censorship. This is going to be the solution to what we've all been struggling. Where do we go to get 24/7 on point, uncensored information that's important for our lives? Bernadette and I discussed the topic of flipping the system, moving away from fear of disease and towards science and natural immunity. We discussed the microbiome, its importance, and the importance of us taking charge of our own health. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. Today, I'm tackling the topic of how does one thrive in adversity. I'm going to get a little personal today. As you can see, I've got my ducks in a row. That lead duck was given to me by one of my patients. It actually says Quack MD on it. Those of you who understand integrative medicine and what we do, yeah, we're the quacks. Now I'm going to get a little more serious, though. I just turned 65. This past year has been like none other. You know, I've been dealing with the Oregon Medical Board, taking my license. I've had a separation from my wife of 30 years, ended in a divorce this last December. The practice was struggling from loss of vaccine income. There have been family dynamics, as you might imagine. Father of 9, 3 biologic, 6 adopted. It's been a year. Starting this show, though, that was one of the gifts that came out of all of this adversity. And I'm so grateful to each one of you who've tuned in, those of you who've supported me during this interesting time. So how does one thrive in adversity? I've had to learn to be open. I've had to learn to really tune in and accept love. I've had to learn to love myself and be open to the lessons that are before me. But staying curious to what I'm experiencing has helped, and trying to remain in a place where you're having sympathy for others who are struggling. The lessons keep coming, and I'm doing my best to learn them as I go. But once learned, that's a whole new place. What used to be a thorn in your side becomes a companion on your journey. I'm so grateful to all in my life who've shown me love, supported me, and allowed me to grow in the way that I needed to grow. And I know a lot of you watching have been growing along with and have been a part of this journey. And so my heart goes out to you all in gratitude. Thank you for all you've done. You're a blessing in my life. So if all of your ducks aren't in a row, just remember, you can breathe in love and exhale stress or whatever's keeping your ducks out of alignment. Enjoy the show. Welcome, Zach Voorhees, to Against the Wind. It is so great to have you back. A few months ago, we discussed your background, the Google censorship machine, YouTube's blacklist, and how Google targets health websites. It's so good to have you back. Tell me, what's new in your life?
Well, I'm really excited that I've been able to launch this blast.video. It's a new solution for censorship that I believe is going to fix the whole censorship problem on the internet. Because what's really going on is there's this centralized control. It's a monopoly, essentially, where everyone's coming to YouTube in order to figure out what everyone is talking about. And since October 15th of 2020, YouTube has been especially aggressive in taking your voices and scattering them amongst the different alternative tech platforms. And so right now, if you are looking for sensible opinions, you have to play this, what I call the social media shuffle, where you go from one website to another website in order to figure out what the heck is everyone talking about today. And what I realized is that I could automate this entire process, which I did for myself. I automated the news feeds and I said, hey, this is a really useful tool. And so I started designing this website, which I released yesterday, called blast.video, that I'd like to show you, Paul.
Let's see it.
All right.
I hate censorship more than anyone else. That I know. And that's the reason why I created Blast.video, a new type of social media system called an aggregator. And the way that it cracks through censorship is that it scans open video platforms like Rumble, like BitChute, like Brighteon, like GabTV, and looks for new content by the content creators that you love. It takes those new videos that it finds, it brings it under one single website called Blast.video, where it serves it to you. Content creators like Joe Rogan, Project Veritas, Alex Jones and InfoWars, Bannon's War Room, Stu Peters, Next News Network, Rebel News, OAN, Newsmax, Epic Times. We feature independent creators like Awaken with JP, Dinesh D'Souza, Stephen Crowder, Bongino Report, Andy Ngo, Chrissy Mayer, Judicial Watch, Lex Friedman, Jordan Peterson, Jordan Sather, Ann Vandersteel, Glenn Beck, Ruben Report, Gothics, Sarah Carter, Viva Free, Charlie Kirk, Mr. Reagan, Lionel Nation, RSBN, Black Pigeon Speak, Scott Adams, Lauren Southern, Lauren Chen, Ben Shapiro, Dell Bigtree, Dix Hexenhammer, Gateway Pundit, Candace Owens, Quite Frankly, Freedom Tunes, We Are Changed, Jimmy Dore, Tim Pool, Anomaly, The Quartering, Black Conservative Patriot, Health Ranger Reports, Matt Walsh, PragerU, Red Pill 78, Sarah Westall, SGT Reports. We scan a total of 250 content creators across platforms every single hour for fresh videos. It's like censorship never even happened to the conservative community. And I'm looking for your help to make Blast.video the number one spot in America for conservative news. The reason is because I want to create a better future. Future. In the future, there is no censorship of human states to blast.video. And now I'm going to use this time machine to go back to the present. And it looks like blast.video couldn't come soon enough. So you may be asking yourself, when does blast.video launch? I've got great news. If all goes well, Blast.video will launch in 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6.
Microphone. Gifts and Go, in order for you guys to support this project, which is to deliver you the news unfiltered and raw. And that's what we want, because we want to be able to take all these different sources. We want to combine them all into one single website so that you can see what other people are talking about every single day of the week. And guess what, Paul? You are on this section. Go ahead and check the health tab when your video launches, when your next video launches, and you'll see yourself on the health feed.
Wow. Zach, how much is this going to cost us?
It's absolutely free. Okay. No login required. It's your news delivered to you. And if you really missed the YouTube recommendation algorithm, well, this is exactly what it is. It's a cross-platform recommendation algorithm. It's free. It's uncensored. The reason why we can stay uncensored is because we don't have a native app, so we don't have to comply with the app store. We're actually a progressive web app. You can install us to the homepage, go to your bookmarks on iOS or Android, and click add page to home screen, and then you're going to get an app icon, just like a regular app. It's going to look like a regular app, but it's actually going to be a web app. That means that we can be as free as we want to be without any sort of restrictions. And really, do you really need to install an app for a news site? Not really, right? Like, it's a solved problem. The browser does it really well. And it's there for you to be able to enjoy the news. And hey, if you like the project, then support my efforts to do this. The goal of my crowdfunding is to get this project funded for the next year and hopefully long, beyond that as well, because we really want to have you know, essentially a news aggregation site that's not owned by bad shadowy people that you don't know who they are. You know who I am. You know, I'm a patriot. I didn't ask to be in this role. I just wanted to be an engineer. But unfortunately, you know, the situation is what it is. And, you know, I got green in the face trying to tell other people, you need to aggregate all this content. Like I told Gab, I told, you know, a bunch of other sites, why don't you just grab all the people's content? Because people aren't interested in a platform. They are interested in the people on those platforms.
Right.
Right. And so really what these platforms are is the representations of people, like spaces where people can gather. And so this idea that I had, which was to grab everyone that's around the internet and just combine them all into one single page, sort of fell on deaf ears. And so I said, well, if they're not going to do it, then I might as well do it myself because I've got the chops. And so I learned how to do web development. I was a C++ programmer before, but how hard could it be? So I learned JavaScript, I learned web deployment, and I built up this website. And unlike the other websites, this one can't be taken down because we don't have any dynamic components to it. It's a static site that's generated and then pushed out to the CDNs, and it updates once every hour. And so you can't overload it. There's nothing to take down. Hackers can't take it down. And hey, if you're a hacker out there, try to take it down. And because it's built using this simple technology, if Amazon's like, oh, we're not going to host it. Oh, well, guess what? Turns out that you can run this thing from a laptop. So, you know, this is my solution to the censorship problem. I'm expecting it to pretty much solve it for America. And I expect that other countries, hopefully around the world, will copy this idea and use it for their own sort of like domestic aggregation of the influencers that are in this country. So I think that this is a really huge step in America. Censorship has been a real big thorn in all of your sides. And this is my straightforward solution to get rid of it. So I hope that if you're listening to this right now, that you come to blast.video, you bookmark it, and you start coming here every single day, because I've tried really, really hard to make this the best place for conservative news 24/7. And if it's not, then I'm going to make sure that it is every single day.
You know, Zach, the only thing I would add to that, because I come from actually a very liberal background, and some of our viewers come from a liberal background, news is news, folks. And while you take a more conservative approach, and at least from how you approach things, you're just presenting news. I mean, there are a lot of people on this platform that you listed off who some might call them conservative, some might not. Folks, you need the real truth. You need the uncensored news. And this is the spot. I don't know how you pulled it off IT tech wise. Thank God you're a genius in that area. And here you go, world. Have at it.
Yep. Here it is. Thank you so much, Paul, for featuring this. For all of you sitting at home, you know, please use blast.video every day. And if you like the work that I'm doing, please support me at givesendgo/blast.video. Again, that's givesendgo.com/blast.video.
I imagine, Zach, this is extremely expensive to put together and actually continue, because I know from trying to do my show isn't live, it's pre-recorded, because live is so expensive. And there's expenses involved, right?
Well, you know, the thing is that it's usually really expensive, but I did all the work myself. So, you know, I hand built this site. I didn't contract it out to anyone else. So right now, the costs are essentially zero. But once people start coming to the site and those server bills start racking up, then it's going to get really expensive. Like running a website that serves, you know, one person is a lot different of an expense than one that serves potentially millions.
Right.
And so that's what we're looking to get.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. When you start having hundreds of thousands and millions of people accessing that server, there's a cost, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, substantial cost. So folks, support this. This is what we've been asking for. This is what we've needed. And thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you very much, Paul. You have a great day.
You too. Welcome, Nick Corbishley, author of the book Scan. Thank you for sending me this copy. I got to read the book before it's released, and it's just come out. And wow, what an important book. I've just been really eager to talk to you. You tackle this issue of vaccine passports with some real clarity. Maybe start off by just telling me a little bit about yourself and what got you to write this book.
Okay. Well, I'm a British journalist who's been living in Barcelona for the last 20 years. I started writing about vaccine passports in around about, it was April 2021, when I started seeing what was happening in Israel. Israel was the first, what you might call democracy, Western democracy, to go down the route of launching a vaccine passport. And I was beginning to see what was happening there. And it was setting off certain alarm bells in my mind, seeing how much segregation, how much discrimination we were beginning to see, this kind of like coercion of people to take the vaccines. And I began to look at what was happening in the European Union, because they were considering going down the same route, which they did a couple of months later. And I wrote my first article in April 2021, and I said that there were seven major concerns that we should be looking out for with regard to vaccine passports. And we were maybe a little bit complacent. We were being told the wrong story. We were being told that this is just a continuation of what we've done in the past. We were being told that this is, you know, we've had vaccine certificates before, and this is just like a modern digital continuation of this. And it just didn't stack up.
I traveled the world as a kid. My parents were missionaries, and the extent of any kind of vaccine record was like for yellow fever. You had to have proof of that shot to go into certain countries. That's about it. I mean, we were, you know, everybody could travel the world freely. The passport you're talking about in Israel, I think, is that the green pass?
That's a green pass. Yes. Yep. And it was interestingly what came out 2 months later in the European Union in June was also called the Green Pass. So a little bit of a coincidence there. But I mean, the really dark thing for me is just the way that it incrementally expands. So it begins, you know, in Europe, we were told that the EU's Green Pass was going to be it was purely to reopen borders, to get people traveling again, to revitalize the tourism sector, which is nice important in the world right now. And within about a week or two, you had countries using it for domestic purposes, using it to prevent people from being able to have a drink in a bar or having a drink in a restaurant or a bite to eat in a restaurant. So we have a friend in France who was essentially excluded from an online course that she'd been doing because she was unvaccinated. So, I mean, you began to see these things happen, and you say, this really doesn't have anything to do with public health. And one of the most important points that I raised in this article back in April was that we don't know how safe or how effective these vaccines are. So to be using these sorts of systems, these sort of approaches, which are extremely coercive, to get people to take a vaccine whose efficacy and whose safety record we had no idea about, just seemed very, very irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And we're beginning to see now that, number one, they are not effective when it comes to stopping the transmission of this virus. If they had been, we wouldn't have just been through the biggest wave of COVID-19 a year after the rollout of the vaccines. Right. So, I mean, any claim that they, you know, the fact that Europe, the country, the region of the world with the most vaccine passports per person, saw the biggest waves, should be proof enough.
Yeah.
And now we're beginning to see more and more questions being asked about their safety record. So I mean, yes, it's something that I found. I think that what I was writing in the book 4-5 months ago was controversial at that time. Because, I mean, we were in the middle of the Delta wave, and it seemed like, you know, well, they're still doing something. Now, the vaccines are still doing something. But I mean, like after the Omicron wave, I mean, even public health officials in many, many different countries are saying, look, there's really no point to them. And we're beginning to see more and more of a withdrawal of these vaccines.
So is Europe still using the vaccine passport?
Now, that is a good question. It's like the Schrödinger cat. It's like it is and it isn't. It depends where you're looking. So the story we're being told is that it's being, you know, dramatically withdrawn, very quickly withdrawn. So, I mean, even France, which is one of the worst countries in terms of like when it comes to putting in place a draconian vaccine passport system, today it said that it's withdrawing almost all of its restrictions. And so in Spain, the country where I'm speaking from right now, most of the regions have abandoned vaccine passports added, you know, for domestic purposes. And this is the story in more and more countries. So even Germany, Austria has abandoned its vaccine mandate. The day, I think it was the day before it was supposed to enforce it, it would have to enforce it. So, I mean, like we're seeing this kind of dramatic retreat. And that is the story we're being told. And it's a beautiful story and we should be celebrating it.
Yes.
If only it were completely true. And this is the catch. And we're being told the story. We're kind of like being led down the garden path because on the one hand, we're being told that this, you know, we are going back to normal as they describe it. On the other hand, we are seeing big efforts being made to make vaccine passports necessary for all forms of international travel.
Mm.
So you've got the World Health Organization, according to two or three different reports, is preparing the ground for making it an official guideline. So, I mean, the World Health Organization has been resisting this for over a year. It has been saying, like, you know, vaccine passports are not justifiable because they, you know, they increase discrimination, segregation, inequality, and also because, and this is what they said in April last year, we don't know how effective they are. And ironically, now that we know that they are really not very effective at all when it comes to stopping transmission, the World Health Organization is apparently, according to Politico, an article in Politico, which is a very respected kind of publication, and they are on the verge of making this not a requirement, but a guideline. So, I mean, the World Health Organization can only provide guidelines.
Right. So in your book, Scanned, you talk about digital surveillance, and I think there's a real potential for digital passports, right? Right now, they're still paper, aren't they? Or are they already digital?
Oh, no, the vaccine passports are purely digital.
They're digital.
You can have, I mean, like the vaccine passports are digital informed, but I mean, like they can be printed out. So if you want to go analog style, you can have a paper printout of the QR code, which allows you to continue accessing those things. But the vaccine passports are 98%. I imagine the vast majority of people are using it through their mobile phone.
So they'll have their cell phone and they'll just pop their mm-hmm. QR code and that's how they're going to move about. So I know I interviewed United Airlines flight attendant about mm-hmm. what was going on in China and where they already have a digital surveillance system. It was a fascinating story of their Chinese guide in the market. Mm-hmm. Her face appeared on a major billboard and you have lost such and such credit score, like instantaneous notification on her phone and on a billboard. She didn't even know what she had done to lose a social credit score, but it was just that story to me was like, wow, digital surveillance is very invasive and perhaps it's coming to a place near you.
Well, I mean, to an extent, we're already there. So, I mean, to an extent, we are, you know, we are exposed to very, very, what should we say, very broad forms of digital surveillance through our mobile phones. You know, the large tech companies know a heck of a lot about what we do. And they sell that data onto third-party companies all the time. So in a sense, we've given up a large part of our privacy. But this is kind of happening in a kind of overt fashion. So in a covert fashion, it's not something we've necessarily signed up to. It's not something that is official policy as such. So this is a scary thing where you have vaccine passports and kind of like, you know, their ultimate iteration of all this, which is the digital identity. You are essentially, you're making this overt. It is part of basic, the way we live. And it's perfectly correct and right. So, I mean, from that moment on, it stops being something that's covert and becomes something that is completely official, completely overt, completely accepted. And once you're in that position, it's really hard to kind of come back from it, because it's a little bit like you were saying in the case with China. You know, in China, the social credit system is not completely 100% operational in the sense that it's not up all over the country. It's still kind of like being used in large parts, large geographic areas, but it's not completely complete yet. But when you look at how they're able to do it, the goal is to create model citizens, to encourage people to behave well, which sounds nice.
According to someone.
Yeah, well, this is where, this is the dark part. So, I mean, most people can kind of agree that if you take your dog out for a walk and your dog does his business in the middle of the pavement where everybody's going to walk, and you just walk away from that and you leave that little pile of dog poo or whatever, then that is not socially good behavior. And a lot of people, most people will say, well, you know, if there's a little bit of a slap on the wrist for doing something like that, then that's understandable. That's, you know, and people might say the same about going through red lights. So, I mean, like there are a lot of things that people would accept in terms of, you know, this is socially undesirable. Maybe we could have. The problem is when you enter the political area. The problem is when you start talking about what people are talking about, what people are thinking, what information they're sharing, what kind of company they're keeping. So one of the dark elements is if you imagine like a world in the future, which we've seen kind of like through the Black Mirror series, you know, just simply being with somebody who has a very low social credit score could end up affecting your own social credit score. So it creates this coercive element, which forces us to kind of like stop associating with certain people. But I mean, like I think it goes beyond the surveillance. The surveillance is a dark element of this. But for me, the scariest element of digital identity, the scariest element of vaccine passports, is the ability to coerce people to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's forced compliance is how I put it. And that is the really chilling element here.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're using technologies to push people into certain behaviors and away from other behaviors. As we've seen recently, for example, in Canada with the freezing of bank accounts of anybody who donates money, not just people who participate in this protest movement in the Freedom Convoy protest movement, but people who just donated a bit of money. That is terrifying. If it had happened in Putin's Russia, if it had happened in Maduro's Venezuela, it would have been on the front pages of every single newspaper. Yeah. Because it happened in Trudeau's Canada, I mean, like we did not hear about it.
It's unbelievable, actually.
In Spain, it was not in the news.
Yeah. This is a good segue into another topic in your book, which is, I think, maybe most disturbing to me, is the digital currency move and how that ties into all of this.
Okay. So, I mean, this is something that, again, is not getting the attention it deserves. It's something that is absolutely clearly happening, because we've got 87 central banks on planet Earth, which is roughly half of all the central banks. And these encompass all of the major central banks. They are all experimenting with digital currencies, what we'll call central bank digital currencies, CBDCs. And this would essentially be, this would allow each person in each country to have a bank account of sorts with the central bank. Which may sound cool, and it will be like, you know, the the digital currency will be on parity with the real currency. But it will be, it will function almost like a kind of token system. And the scary thing, I mean, there are lots of scary things about this. Number one, you need a digital identity in order to get a system set up. So, I mean, like, there's an article in the Financial Times going back all the way to May, I think, where they're citing bankers from Goldman Sachs. And they're saying that in order for central bank digital currencies to exist, we need to have everybody in the country with digital identity. So for one thing to happen, the other must happen. So that's one thing that should concern us enormously. The second thing that should concern us enormously is the fact that these digital currencies will allow central banks to track just about every, well, not just about, every single transaction we make. They will be able to follow it. I mean, like, this was even admitted by the president of the Bank of International Settlements, which is the central bank of central banks. And he basically said, you know, when somebody spends, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but when somebody spends 1,000 pesos in Mexico, when somebody spends $100 in the United States, we don't know where that money goes. We don't know what it is spent on. But when somebody spends $100 of the digital dollars, we will know exactly where that money goes. So it's the perfect means of tracking and tracing. But it goes beyond that. I mean, like, they're talking about programmable currencies. So they're talking about creating this system where they will be able to decide what people can spend their money on. It's not out in the open in the sense that it's on the front pages of every newspaper, as it should be. This is in occasional articles. Like, there was an article in the Daily Telegraph in the UK, something like 6-7 months ago. And it was just there. I mean, like, they were just saying, like, we have to ask whether or not we want our currency to be programmable, to be able to decide what people should be able to spend the money on or not. If maybe they've got certain weight issues, whether or not they're allowed to be able to buy certain foods that are not gonna help their weight issues. If they drink quite a lot of alcohol, maybe we can control how much. And so, I mean, like, it's in this guise, but I mean, like, the terrifying thing is just the amount of power that gives to institutions, central banks, that have already amassed huge, huge amounts of kind of unaccountable power over the economy in the last 20 years. And I mean, that is truly a terrifying prospect. The other thing that really scares me, I mean, there are two other things. I mean, like, I have to go into quite some detail here, but I mean, like, in order for it to function, it would mean the end of cash. I think this is really important to realize.
You think,
I mean,
they would ban cash?
I mean, like, they would probably phase it out, and they would be able to do that by making it harder and harder to use cash. So they would have, I imagine, and I'm only speculating here, but I imagine what they would do is they would create incentives to use the digital money.
What would happen with the other, like, Bitcoin kind of digital currencies? What happens with those?
Well, I mean, I would not be able to say with total clarity, but if you look at what has happened in the last year or two, it's going to get harder and harder to trade these cryptocurrencies. I imagine that once central banks have their own digital currencies in place, they are not likely to want to have too much competition. So I imagine that we're going to see more and more regulatory pressures on the use of these cryptocurrencies.
Interesting.
But I mean, like, that is something that I think is really important, because it's like almost like our final bastion of privacy. It's our final bastion of freedom to a certain extent. It's just the ability to use cash to pay for things without having a record, to be able to pay for things without having an intermediary in place. And to decide how you want to spend your money, to have your own money. So, I mean, one of the weird things that people don't realize is that when we go fully digital, it's like, you will never be able to say, look, I want to have hold of my own money. your money will always be in some digital account somewhere. It will be moving between digital accounts.
Yeah.
But you will never be able to have your own.
Knowing what they did to the Canadians who just wanted to protest, they can freeze your money.
Mm-hmm. That is kind of like the, yeah, that is the extreme. That is the ultimate. But they've shown already, it's like they've already shown their hand, which I found incredible to go that far because, but this is what's incredible really when you think about it, that move, if that had been reported properly in the press, we would be having a dialogue, a conversation, not just in the alternative media, but in the mainstream media about the risks of digital identity and central bank digital currencies. That's not happening because the media, unfortunately, are not doing their job of keeping people abreast of what is happening.
Yeah, they seem to not seem. They clearly are not allowed to touch certain topics.
Yes. And I think that, you know, where the Canadian story, they were allowed to cover the Canadian story in certain ways, especially if it involved demonizing the truckers.
Right.
They were very much, you know, free to do that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when it came to that big, the big move that Trudeau's government took, which was to give the banks this power to freeze bank accounts with no due process and no recourse. I mean, it's terrifying.
Yeah. You allude to they. Is this, is the they, these uber wealthy, I mean, who wants this? Who wants this digital currency, this digital world, this control?
Well, I mean, I think that, I mean, one organization that clearly wants it because it has spent the last 4 or 5 years explicitly stating that it wants this is the World Economic Forum. That is clear as day. Its founder, Klaus Schwab, has written this book about called The Great Reset, which is all about transforming. And, you know, he talks a lot about the fourth industrial revolution, which is about transforming the world into this totally interconnected digital utopia. And you know, we've gone a long way there. I mean, like we've gone through probably something like 10 to 15 years of digital evolution in the space of 2 years. This is what, you know, the pandemic and the lockdowns and all the other things that the pandemic has induced, this is what that is allowed, is enabled this huge transformation that you could argue was going to take place. And that there's certainly an argument that we were moving in that direction. That the question is whether or not we would have gone so fast as we have in the last 2 years. And we certainly wouldn't. Right. And if you're going through this sort of process slowly, you're more likely to get questions and you're more likely to get a debate forming. And I think that this is really important. In the UK, in the first, I think it was like in between 2005, 2008, 2009, the British government under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown desperately wanted to get identity cards set up in the UK. And I think there was going to be a digital element to these. And there was a long debate about this. There was a big public debate. And eventually it was voted down and people clearly didn't want it. And this is what happens when things happen slowly and almost in a natural evolution. But when things happen really, really quickly in a kind of like emergency scenario. Yeah,
responding to fear.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get those debates.
Yep.
And, you know, people are, a lot of time, people are not even aware these things are happening until they've happened. And so, I mean, like, certainly the World Economic Forum. So, I mean, the World Economic Forum, for those of your listeners who are not aware of this organization, I mean, like, it's been around for about 50 years. It represents the interests of 600 to 700 of the largest corporations on the planet. Corporations, banks, Wall Street, funds. I mean, like, it's an enormous organization. And it's enormously influential. I mean, we're talking about an organization that is able to shape to a certain degree economic and financial trends and developments around the world has been doing so for the last 40 years, but its influence has grown larger and larger. What we didn't realize is the extent to which it has been influencing our governments. And that is beginning to come out now. And this is really important.
Yeah.
I mean, like when we vote for our, in the US, Uber, your congressmen, congresswomen, your senators, when you vote for your representatives, you think that they are representing you. Mm-hmm. You think that they are representing a local constituency. And when those same representatives begin to show potential to go to scale the system, to get higher in within the party, whether it's Democrat or Republican, then maybe what happens is they suddenly get an invitation to go on the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders Program. And that's where you start to, you know, this is what we are not aware of, or we were not aware of until very recently. And, you know, you've got some very, very important people in very, very high levels of government that have been through this program. It's almost like they're grooming our leaders.
Maybe your next book is exposing all the people who've gone through that program.
Well, I mean, it's certainly something. If I'd had more time, I had like a pretty tight deadline with this book because there was such an urgency to getting it out.
Yeah, things are happening fast.
Things are happening so fast. But I mean, like in the case of the Trudeau government, Klaus Schwab, the leader of the World Economic Forum, he boasted in 2017 that he was very happy to see that more than half of his cabinet, more than half of his ministers had been through the Young Global Leaders Program. So I mean, like that is not being disclosed by our representatives.
Yep.
And we need to know this. We need to know whether or not they are going through these sort of programs.
I agree. Yep. So there's your next project. As we get to wrapping this up, what's your glimpse of the future?
Oof. It may sound pretty bleak, but I'm actually a bit of an optimist. I think that there is cause for optimism. I think that clearly there are huge steps afoot to radically change the way our societies function and the way our lives play out. But I think more and more people are beginning to realize what is happening. There is a kind of awakening. I think that a lot of people have had two shots of the vaccine, and in the last 3 months have had COVID-19, mm-hmm. Thanks to Omicron. And those people who were on board with what was going on, more or less, maybe not overly enthusiastic, but they were going along with it. Now they've been told they need to take a third booster shot. And the Pfizer CEO came out, I think, today or yesterday, saying that, well, actually, it needs to be four. And I think that we're beginning to get more questioning, you know, whether or not this is desirable, whether this is a good thing. So I think that we're beginning to see a certain amount of resistance, a certain amount of opposition growing to that. But yeah, I do think that time is running out. We have limited time. They're not going to stop. They're not going to slow things down. If anything, they're accelerating.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like the UK government, the Canadian government, the Australian government, I mean, like you can look around the world. There are dozens and dozens of countries that are launching digital identity programs, even as they're telling their voters, their public, that, you know, we're withdrawing the vaccine passport. So they're doubling down as quickly as they can. So it's, I think, if we have any chance of stopping this, then we need to be exceptionally vigilant and we need to share information as much as possible. But I mean, like the one reason that gives me hope is that we've had moments like this before in the past. So we've had the SOPA Act, which was going back around about a decade when, you know, they wanted to change the way the internet functioned. And there was a huge public backlash. And that was, you know, they managed to stop that. We also had like the trade agreements, the TPP, the TTIP, TISA, And I remember writing about these in 2013, 2014. They seemed like a foregone conclusion. These were the biggest companies on the planet trying to completely transform the way the trading system worked, the way our economies function. And there was a problem. The problem was Donald Trump got elected in 2016. Now, I'm not a massive fan of Donald Trump, but one thing he did, which really annoyed the establishment, the business, financial, and political establishment, was to say no more TPP. I mean, that was like years and years in the making, and just like with one wave of the hand, not going to happen. So I think that, you know, if history has taught us anything, that, you know, if you can mobilize enough people, if you can reach kind of like the sweet point, then you can stop this as a people. But yeah. But we need to reach that kind of like that optimal level.
Absolutely, Nick. Well, folks, get a copy of the book scanned, get yourself informed, mobilize. Nick, you're leading a very important charge of getting important information out to the world. Where can people find your book?
They can find it on Amazon. They can find it on the publisher's website, which is chelseagreen.com. This is a brilliant publisher. It's in Vermont.
I love Chelsea Green.
It's not a huge publisher, but it's willing to go where most publishers won't.
Yep.
And most self-respecting bookshops as of Thursday.
Wonderful. Your final thoughts, you get the last word.
My final thoughts. I think that the most important thing in moments like these, which are moments of crazy turbulence, where you've got crisis upon crisis upon crisis happening, the most important thing is to maintain our humanity and not allow those who want to divide us to divide us.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome, Bernadette Pager, to Against the Wind, Docs and Science Under Fire. It is always a pleasure to have you on the show. You are the Public Policy Director of Informed Life Washington, Informed Choice Washington, and you are the host of an Informed Life Radio.
Yeah.
What you are thinking about bringing to us today is something I've been wanting to talk about, and there's nobody better to talk about it than with you. The need for us to change the narrative, flip the system away from fear of disease, and really start realizing that our own natural immunity is so vital, right? And so I'm eager to have you kick us off with something that is absolutely alarming.
Yes, exactly. So we will start with this article that just appeared March 22nd, 2022 in Fierce Pharma, the first biotech division of Fierce Pharma. I do recommend individuals subscribe to this. You get insider information that you need to know about. So Moderna is going to be using mRNA technology, which we've seen to be dangerous, to make a triple vax that aims at the common cold, RSV, and COVID. So, you know, what could go wrong here? So really what I wanted to talk to you about today, Dr. Paul, of even if they could achieve this safely, is this a good idea to unnaturally interrupt the immune process? Yes. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that. So, Bernadette, I think you know, I travel the country speaking at big health conferences and freedom conferences. And my main topic is revealing, presenting the vaxxed, unvaxxed data. And the conclusion that comes when you look at all the well-done studies that actually have unvaccinated patients in them, so they truly have a placebo group, the alarming number of chronic diseases that are occurring in the vaccinated when you compare them to the unvaccinated, and the powerful significance of that data, it is just overwhelmingly clear that what we do when we vaccinate is we shift the immune system towards allergy and autoimmunity, and we create chronic disease. So this idea that we're going to vaccinate ourselves out of every possible pathogen, every time we add more and more vaccines, we create a greater problem.
Yeah, exactly. I was driving down the freeway on my way to Nashville here in Tennessee the other day, and I had an aha moment. They had a news story about a new vaccine for dog allergies. So, and they were describing it as you get a little bit of this protein that they think drives most of the dog allergies, and it trains your immune system not to respond to that protein. And it was just a different way of seeing and explaining. And I realized, you know, one of the reasons why we have such huge unintended health consequences to vaccination is that very fact. The fact that if you're getting an injection of a protein, it does train your immune system not to have a full reaction to it. In the case of a pathogen, it means your immune system never develops a full immune response to fully clear that pathogen. And you're training your immune system not to properly respond, right? Not to properly clear viruses. And those first few years of life are absolutely critical to training your immune system how to respond to the microbial world, to know what's friendly and what's not friendly, right?
Yeah, I think neither of us are necessarily anti-vaccine as far as the concept. If you could develop a way that safely helped a person's immune system just get a natural response to something that was dangerous and it was safe, I'm sure we'd be all for it. We'd be lining up. I mean,
well, I was going to say, except for what we have learned, the unintended consequences of skewing the immune system to not have that full response.
Right.
So I'm more and more moving the more I understand how the immune system works and how shots try to trick the immune system into not doing fully what it needs to do. I move more toward being terrain theory, strengthen the individual immune system, and then allow it to fully exercise itself and develop that acquired immunity. So I hate to say it, Dr. Paul, but I'm really fully embracing vaccines as not being healthy immunity of the future.
We don't have a process in the vaccine manufacturing pipeline. Nowhere is there a process that's really looking out for exactly what we're starting to talk about. So I was talking in theory, it could be a great idea. It has not proven to be. We are finding that every single time they bring a new vaccine to market, it seems that we have greater and greater problems, not fewer and fewer. The magnitude of the chronic illness that we're creating. I mean, just that dog vaccine idea you had, basically they're creating an immunosuppressed state. Well, what could possibly go wrong with that? We've seen that with the COVID-19 jabs, the mRNA technology, which is just making people at such higher, greater risk for cancer because the immune system's just shutting down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So if people want to learn or read more about sort of this whole philosophy of health that we're talking about, there is a post on Informed Choice Washington's website called Perfectly Designed from 2019. And it's still fairly current, even though it's several years old, that talks about, you know, your immune system at birth and why we're designed to need our mother's protection at birth, that passive immunity from the mother, and how if the infant was born able to respond to all pathogens because everything is so new and they have not yet populated their biome, that they would end up in this inflammatory state, which would be unbearable. Right. Yeah. So I encourage people to go look for that. If you go to the Informed Choice Washington website, just search for the word perfectly or perfectly designed, and you will find that article. And I feel like that's where we need to go. All of medicine needs to fully respect how our immune systems work, and disease is not your enemy. Our immune systems need a workout. They need to, that's how they mature.
Yeah. Think, folks, about a baby in the womb. And, you know, in the womb, it's debatable whether it's completely sterile or not, but basically you're not swimming in a soup of pathogens. A baby is born pretty naive to all these trillions of organisms that will very quickly populate
every orifice of your body, your skin. And that's what we call the biome or the microbiome. And this is actually a living part of our immune system. We need a healthy microbiome. Those of us who deal with chronic conditions, those of us who try to heal people who've had injury, basically health problems that have developed from vaccines or toxins in the world, are number one, hands down. Talk to any natural functional medicine doctor, integrative, complementary, alternative, whatever you want to call it. People who really deal with chronic illness, we deal with the microbiome first. Heal the gut. So this article covers something so beautifully. Baby in the bathwater, right? So that little section, find it. C-sections prevent the baby from going through the birth canal where they get their first inoculation of good, healthy bacteria that start the biome. Babies are being washed too soon. Hospitals are getting better at that. They'll wait a day sometimes now, but you remove all that covering that helps them get a healthy microbiome. Early formula feeding doesn't help. Vaccination for sure. I cover this when I travel around the country. It is shifting, skewing the immune system towards allergy, autoimmunity, and chronic disease. And then glyphosate and other toxins in the environment. I mean, it's just such a hit that's preventing that natural development of immunity that, you know, we have a God-given system that's absolutely amazing. And this thought that we as man can kind of tinker with it, especially now when you're getting into this mRNA technology, there's a certain level of insanity, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. And highly profitable insanity because of the way it's structured and the way our public health and our governmental entities have embraced these as their tools. So they minimize risk. And they never look at unintended consequences. You know, they don't look at long-term outcomes. And your study is so brilliant in showing that, hey, we need to stop and actually look at this. And so as they are doing with COVID, we need to look at what causes severe disease, not fear disease, what causes severe disease. And for those who need that extra help, if, you know, what treatments are available for what's going around to help your immune system? Because when you emerge after a disease experience, if you're in beautiful health, you have almost no symptoms when you experience disease, but your immune system gets beautifully trained and develops memory. If you're in less good health, you might have some more symptoms in which you need these treatments that are available. But anytime the industry targets a disease with a vaccine, treatments get pushed aside and they act as if it's deadly unless you're vaccinated, which is just absurd.
Yeah, it's actually backwards. So natural immunity from having had an infection, have your whole entire immune system, both arms of the immune system, the innate and the antibody producing side, interact if they need to, you are left with a very comprehensive level of protection as opposed to a very narrow level of protection. We've certainly seen that with the COVID-19 vaccines. You don't have an immune system that recognizes the entire virus sequence. So those who have recovered from natural infection have this robust immunity that's much longer lasting, sometimes lifelong, often lifelong. Unlike vaccine-induced immunity, we're learning is like you're lucky if you've got 3 months of partial protection. Mm-hmm. So this is huge, folks. This massive push towards, we've got a vaccine for everything. I mean, the common cold, come on, Moderna. wow. This is just a profit grab.
Can you imagine then how many jabs a year are they thinking of getting in the human population? I mean, and it could just, it's just going to fail in horrific ways of undermining our ability to fend off everything, right?
Yeah.
Very alarming.
It's super alarming. Folks, if you haven't gone to thecontrolgroup.org, go check that out. This was an independently done study comparing, basically looking at those in 48 of the 50 states in the United States who have never been touched by a single vaccine. And you look at their health outcomes, it is mind-blowing. No cancer, no heart disease, no diabetes, no ADD, ADHD. What?
Yeah.
Like, unvaccinated people are so incredibly healthy. I've seen the same thing in my practice. That's why I finally had to write that book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan, which isn't friendly enough, by the way. It's a starting point for people who are still thinking you should follow the CDC schedule. I'm not giving vaccine recommendations here. We're just sharing ideas. It is really important, folks, if you haven't woken up to the fact that it's on us,
We, the individuals, have to now take charge of our own health. We cannot trust the captured agencies. Public health, CDC, all the government agencies have been completely captured by pharma money. And so they're just basically putting out propaganda, not science.
Exactly. You nailed it. So we need everybody to be the news, meaning you spread this good information. Knowledge is power. And the more people who choose this real health paradigm, which aligns with current science and with your God-given immunity, they go beautifully together, you know, and then stops feeding the monster of the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
Then we can be the change we need to be.
Right. And of course, folks, if you're not aware of the fact that censorship is happening at a massive level, then you're just hearing, we follow the science, from the likes of people like Fauci and people who are so conflicted and they're just perpetrating atrocities on humanity, basically, in the name of science. But they're only giving you this little piece of junk science and the massive amount of amazing data that those like Bernadette and I and Del Bigtree and the High Wire and the Children's Health Defense, so much amazing information. I'm just touching on a long list. Have a great week. Dr. Paul here. Doctorsandscience.com is where you go to get access to my exclusive members-only section. This is how you, the viewers, support our work. We have no sponsors. We are fully supported by you, our viewers. What do you get in the members section? It's quite a list. You get access to a couple of my ebooks. The first one is the authoritative reference list for my Vaccine Friendly Plan book. I also have written a book, very extensive, called Everyday Health, that covers pretty much what I think you should be doing if you want to live a healthy life in this world today. But there is so much more. Join me monthly for a live Q&A. Submit your questions online. Make sure you get them answered. That is my intention for you. It's a time for us to interact. In addition to this, you get transcripts of every show. We have other bonus content. And I think one of the huge bonus content pieces is the PowerPoints of the talks I'm giving as I travel around the country. People are always asking me, how can we get those PowerPoints? This is how you do it. Head on over to doctorsandscience.com and become a member and join the team of Against the Wind. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.